Metallic Squirrels would be a great name for a rock band. A scheduling program. You know how annoying it can be to keep a schedule on old-fashioned paper? Every time you want to record an appointment, you have to get out your schedule book and write the appointment down. Now, wouldn't it be easier if you simply had to go to your computer, turn it on, wait for it to boot up, use the mouse to locate and click on the scheduling program icon, wait for the program to load, and then use the mouse to get the right day, and then type in the appointment information in the proper space and the time in the proper space, and making sure you use the format allowed by the program, then close the scheduling program without being 100% certain that you would ever see this information again? If you answered yes, then you're ready to join the millions of cyberhumans like me who have dumped clumsy schedule and address books weighing as much as 3 ounces and are now carrying around laptop computers that can incorporate the same information in a package that, including power cables, spare batteries, and so on, weighs easily 25 times as much. It's only a matter of time before we start writing our grocery lists on our laptops and carrying them around with us around the supermarket. We don't care what you think. We love our laptops. A personal finance program. Did you know that your computer can handle your personal finances? Well, it can. You can buy the hugely popular program called Quicken. Install it in your computer, and within a matter of just minutes, you'll be entering your financial records. Figure on about a year for this. Well, it's worth the effort, because once everything is entered, Quicken can take over the job of managing your money. It can balance your checkbook, manage your investments, do your taxes, even pay your bills automatically via electronic banking transfers. You don't even have to know what's going on. You can be totally oblivious to what's happening to your money, all thanks to a program written by people you don't even know, people who could probably figure out a clever way to have their program transfer your money into their accounts if they wanted to. I bet they could even figure out a way to have their program monitor the other programs on your computer so that if, for example, you were using your word processor to write something negative about Quicken, it could take over your keyboard and pay no attention to what Mr. Berry is writing about Quicken. Quicken is a good program. Quicken is a safe program. There is no reason to fear Quicken. You like Quicken. You must have Quicken. You are getting very sleepy. You will buy Quicken. Another essential kind of software you need to get is a mindless game to play when you're on the phone. You may have noticed that when you talk on the phone with computer users, you don't seem to have their full attention. This is because they're playing some kind of game, usually solitaire, which comes preloaded on many computer systems. Solitaire is a phenomenally stupid and pointless game, so naturally, computer users become obsessed with winning at it to the exclusion of almost all other concerns. This is why they sound the way they do over the phone. You. Bob, remember when you did the cooling system specs on the Weasel Point power plant? Bob. Yes, Black 6. You. Bob, the Weasel Point plant? Bob. The what? You. Listen, Bob, the Weasel Point reactor is overheating badly and they can't control it. You need to... Bob. Hey, there are 2 red queens, right? So where the hell is the other one? You. Bob, for God's sake, you need to get down here right now because in about 2 hours the whole thing's gonna... Bob. Get down where? Yes, a mindless game will definitely help you pass the time at work while at the same time benefiting society by preventing the gross national product from becoming unnecessarily large. Another indispensable software tool for anybody who cares about the important political and social issues of the day is an anagram generator. I don't wish to toot my own journalistic horn, but many observers believe that the turning point in the 1992 race for the Democratic presidential nomination was when I broke the story during the New Hampshire primary that the letters in Paul E. Tsongas could be rearranged to spell gaseous plant. I believe I was also the journalist to reveal that Arlen Specter can be rearranged to spell creep rentals, and that Winston Churchill can be rearranged to spell hurls cow chin lint. How do I obtain this kind of vital information? I use an anagram generating program. I simply type in a name or a phrase, and in a few seconds, my computer spews out a list of all the things that it can be rearranged to spell. For example, just now I typed in Regis Philbin and found that it could be rearranged to spell, among many other things, glib, Irish pen, nip, his gerbil. This task took me maybe a minute. A stark contrast to the way anagrams were generated back in the days of George Washington, who, lacking computer power, used teams of slaves to determine, after months of grueling labor, that his name could be rearranged to spell I gnaw hog estrogen. Of course, there are those who believe that the old manual system of making anagrams is better, that computers lack the flair and imagination to develop a truly great anagram. One person who feels this way is my good friend Gene Weingarten, an editor at the Washington Post, who does all of his anagrams manually. To say that Gene is serious about his anagram work is like saying that the Pacific Ocean is damp. But Gene gets results. He is widely credited with being the first person to discover that H. Ross Perot can be rearranged to spell short poser. So I figured that Gene would be the perfect human to use for a human versus machine anagram generating competition, similar to the Big Blue versus Garry Kasparov chess battle, but with lower voltage. I called Gene. He instantly agreed to set aside his career and family for as long as it took to engage in this competition. We agreed that the name we'd generate anagrams from would be William Gates. I hung up the phone and typed William Gates into my computer. In less than 90 seconds, it had generated 10,095 anagrams. Of course, most of them were terrible. I wag ill meats, but I thought some of them were okay. I didn't hear from Gene for several days, during which I do not believe he slept. Then he got back to me, and after complaining that William Gates is a lousy set of letters, he read me his list of anagrams, which I'll show you next to the ones I culled from my computer list. Anagrams generated by Gene Weingarten. Is Wallet Magi. Anagrams generated by my computer. I am Gil Sweat. Gene's? I'll smite a wag. Mine? Salami Wiglet. Gene's? Will I tame gas? Mine? I'll aim wet gas. Gene's? The letter G. I waste a mill. Mine? Tail wag slime. Gene's? Igus will meet. Mine? I mate all wigs. Gene's? At Millie wages. Mine? Alias elm twig. His? Wilt's L.A. image. Mine? Emits gal whale. His? I will eat gams. Mine? Slim algae wit. His? I all wit games. Mine? I am a swell git. His? A wilt gasm lie. Mine? I swig malt ale. When we look at these two lists, we are forced to conclude that although the computer is very fast, it would never have come up with the concept of a wilt gasm. To be honest, I had no idea what a wilt gasm was until Gene explained it to me. It's a Wilt Chamberlain orgasm, he said in an irritated voice. It's very funny. Just accept that. Yeah, yes, I hastily agreed. Very funny. Get some sleep. So we see that the human brain can compete with a computer, but the human pays a tragic price in terms of marble loss. It's better to get just an anagram-generating program, or, if you insist on the human touch, call Gene Weingarten at the Washington Post, a newspaper that has earned the respect of the world journalism community because Washington Post can be rearranged to spell Want Spigots, Hun? As well as Shh, Pawns Tooting. Not to mention Town Gasp, No Shit. Okay, we've covered almost all of your basic software needs. There are just a couple more programs that everybody should have, including a home lawyer program. Let's face it, in these lawsuit-intensive times, you really should have a lawyer advising you in every transaction, no matter how minor. Suppose you ask a coworker for a stick of chewing gum. If you just accept the gum, with no legal agreement spelling out the conditions of the transfer, you have no protection if this co-worker should, at some point down the road, claim that he did not intend to give you this stick of gum, only lend it. You could wind up in court without a leg to stand on. So you need the kind of legal advice you can't afford to pay, the kind of hefty legal fees that your top-quality lawyers must charge to compensate themselves for the brain strain involved in thinking up sentences containing large, scary words such as therein, aforementioned, quid pro quo, and delicatessen. What can you do? You can do what I did, which is go to the bargain software bin of your computer store and purchase, for under $10, a home lawyer program. Mine is called Do-It-Yourself Lawyer, and according to the box, it has over 65 easy legal forms. Quickly create ironclad legal documents in the privacy of your own home. I used Do-It-Yourself Lawyer to create an ironclad legal document covering the hypothetical chewing gum transfer. The program asked me a few simple questions about names and addresses, then produced the following document. General assignment. Be it known, for value received, the undersigned L. Fenton Wingle of West Fromage, Arkansas, hereby unconditionally and irrevocably assigns and transfers unto Walter A. the Clam Plinkett of South Fromage, Arkansas, all right, title, and interest in and to the following. 1 stick of Juicy Fruit brand chewing gum, unchewed in the original wrapper. The undersigned fully warrants that it has full rights and authority to enter into this assignment, and that the rights and benefits assigned hereunder are free and clear of any lien, encumbrance, adverse claim, or interest by any third party. This assignment shall be binding upon and inure to the benefit of the parties and their successors and assigns. Signed this 8th day of October, 1996. Isn't that great? Doesn't it just sound so legal? It even has a hereunder in it. Talk about ironclad. You can just imagine the bond of trust that will develop between you and your co-worker when you insist that he sign this document before you will accept his gum. Frankly, now that we have software like this, I don't see why anybody needs to go to law school anymore. You remember that laptop computer that Judge Lance Ito always had in front of him during the O.J. Simpson trial? It wouldn't surprise me a bit to learn that he had Do-It-Yourself Lawyer running on there giving him instructions. Call a recess. You have something sticking out of your nose. The way software is developing, it's only a matter of time before we have do-it-yourself dentist, do-it-yourself commercial airline pilot, and do-it-yourself surgeon. After washing hands, pick up scalpel. Note, if hand bleeds, pick up scalpel by other end. Okay, now we've covered all your fundamental software needs except for one, and I bet you know which one. That's right. You are not really getting maximum personal productivity with your computer unless you have a simulated bass fishing program. As I've grown older, I've noticed that I never go fishing anymore. I've spent a lot of time pondering why this is, and I've finally reached the conclusion that it's because I hate fishing. I mean, you sit out in an unstable boat on an algae-encrusted, rank-smelling lake wearing a big invisible sign that says, "Eat me," in mosquito language, and you impale yourself on nasty little hooks, and you spend hours trying to outwit an animal with the IQ of ketchup, and then if you finally accomplish your objective, you wind up with this fish lying there in your boat, gasping, dying slowly, staring at you with whichever eyeball is on your side, and you could almost hear it saying to you in a gasping but very sarcastic fish voice, "Well, I hope that was fun for you, Mr. Sportsperson." Who needs that? Not me, which is why I stopped fishing. Until I discovered simulated fishing programs, which I swear I'm not making up. Mine is called Trophy Bass. And it starts by creating a virtual lake on my computer screen, featuring the sounds of virtual birds, crickets, frogs, and so on, chirping and peeping out of my speaker. Then I navigate my little virtual motorboat around the lake, accompanied by the virtual fishing guide. He's in a little box in the corner of the screen, wearing a baseball-style cap. He appears to have no body. He's just a head. When I click on his face, he gives me helpful tips like, "There should be fish here." Then I select a virtual lure, cast it with my virtual rod, and yes, the "Fish On" sign flashes, and I am battling a thrashing lunker, whatever that means, using all my mouse skills while the computer plays peppy sporting music. Then finally I get the fish, and my screen displays a detailed color picture of it, plus how much it weighs. It's a very gratifying moment. I would exchange high fives with the virtual fishing guide if he only had arms. You can call me an ecology nut if you want, but I always let the fish go. Anyway, we have now covered all the basic types of software that every computer owner should have. To review, you need, in addition to your simulated bass fishing program, a word processor, a calendar program, a mindless game to play when you should be working, an anagram generator, a home lawyer program, and a personal finance program such as Quicken, or there is no other personal finance program other than Quicken. There is only Quicken. You love Quicken. Quicken is God. You will buy Quicken. Chapter 7, How to Install Software, a 12-step program. 1. Examine the software packaging until you find a little printed box that explains what kind of computer system you need to run the software. It should look something like this. System requirements: 2386 processor or higher, 628.8 MHz modem, 719.7 MB free disk space, 3546 MB RAM, 4323-23 MB ROM, 0594873-7 MB RPM, anti-lock braking system, 2 turtle doves. Note, this software will not work on your computer. 2. Open the software package and remove the manual. This will contain detailed instructions on installing, operating, and troubleshooting the software. Throw it away. 3. Find the actual software, which should be in the form of either a 3.5-inch floppy diskette or a CD-ROM located inside a sealed envelope that says Number 19, typed below. Licensing Agreement. By breaking this seal, the user hereinafter agrees to abide by all the terms and conditions of the following agreement that nobody ever reads, as well as the Geneva Convention and the UN Charter and the secret membership oath of the Benevolent Protective Order of the Elks, and such other terms and conditions, real and imaginary, as the software company shall deem necessary and appropriate, including the right to come to the user's home and examine the user's hard drive, as well as his user's underwear drawer, if we feel like it, take it or leave it until death do us part, one nation indivisible, by the dawn's early light, in the name of the Father, the Son, the Holy Ghost, finders, keepers, losers, weepers, thanks, you've been a great crowd, and don't forget to tip your servers. Number 4. Hand the software to a child, age 3 through 12, and say, "Name of child, please install this on my computer." Number 5. If you have no child age 3 through 12, insert the software in the appropriate drive, type "setup," and press the Enter key. Number 6. Turn the computer on, you idiot. Number 7. Once again, type "setup" and press the Enter key. Number 8. You will hear grinding and whirring noises. These are caused by the whirring grinding unit, or WGU. After which, the following message should appear on your screen. The installation program will now examine your system to see what would be the best way to render it inoperable. Is that okay with you? Choose one and be honest. Yes? Sure. Number 19. After you make your selection, you will hear grinding and whirring for a long time while the installation program does God knows what in there. Some installation programs can actually alter molecular structures so that when they're done, your computer has been transformed into an entirely new device, such as a food processor. At the very least, the installation program will create many new directories, subdirectories, and subdirectories on your hard drive and fill them with thousands of mysterious files with names like PureExe, FesterDat, and Dua. Number 10. When the installation program is finished, your screen should display the following message. Congratulations! The installation program cannot think of anything else to do to your computer and has grown bored. You may now attempt to run your software. If you experience any problems, electrical shocks, insomnia, shortness of breath, nasal discharge, or intestinal parasites, you should immediately... Number 11. At this point, your computer system should become less functional than the federal government, and refusing to respond even when struck with furniture. Number 12. Call the toll-free technical support hotline number listed on the package and wait on the line for a representative who will explain to you in a clear, step-by-step manner how to adopt a child aged 3 through 12. Chapter 8. Word Processing. How to produce attractive, high-impact documents when you have absolutely nothing to say. Or, if God had wanted us to be concise, He wouldn't have given us so many fonts. Not that I'm recommending this, but if you were to sit down and actually read some of the so-called great writers of the past, you would notice immediately that most of the time they make no sense whatsoever. Take William Shakespeare, who was a famous writer during the Shakespearean era. This occurred in the past. Most of his material looks to the naked eye like this. Hamlet, O didst thine vesper dreams ere burnt the day, nor canst thou findest not plums in Fringleway? Gertrude, what? It goes on like this for scene after scene, act after act, until finally the main character is driven insane by the fact that they are all speaking gibberish, kill themselves. What was Shakespeare's problem? How could a person produce so much writing? 38 plays, 157 sonnets, 2 major narrative poems, and 8 screenplays, and not manage to produce more than 4 sentences total that a normal person can understand? The answer is Shakespeare did not have word processing. He had to write everything out by hand, and like most people, his handwriting was almost totally illegible. The actors in his plays were forced to guess what their lines were, and by the time the words got into print, they had almost nothing to do with what Shakespeare originally wrote. For example, Hamlet was supposed to be a comedy about a man who marries a camel. And the problem is not limited to Shakespeare. Even today, hardly anybody can read anybody else's handwriting. Oh, sure, we all start out writing legibly in elementary school. When we have to write on that special writing paper with the lines really far apart so that a capital A is approximately the height of Danny DeVito. Also, we learn to print, and the teachers force us to form each letter clearly and legibly. Thanks to the great big printing method, until we reach about the age of 8, we all write legibly. Then the schools, in what I believe is the single biggest impediment to human productivity, teach us all how to write in script, or cursive. Nobody knows why the schools do this. It's one of those inexplicable traditions that we observe without knowing why, like changing the clocks for daylight saving time. Whatever the reason, cursive is a terrible idea. The very word is Latin for a kind of handwriting that is legible only to the person who is writing it. Oh, sure, cursive looks okay when you're first learning it and the teachers are making us write nice, clear letters. But as soon as we get out of the classroom, our handwriting starts to degenerate. And pretty soon, it's mutated into a series of random marks. If you've ever seen an actual photographic close-up of a note written by President Harry S. Truman on August 3, 1945, Truman later revealed that the purpose of the note was to request waffles for breakfast, although at the time his staff interpreted it to mean, let's drop the atomic bomb. The result of the cursive training is that only about 75 adults in the United States have legible handwriting, and all of these adults are elementary school teachers. I know what I'm talking about here. As a newspaper columnist, I get a lot of handwritten fan mail, and much of it is unreadable. Granted, this is partly because a lot of my fans wear special restraining devices and have to hold their writing implements in their teeth. But even the relatively normal ones write in such a way that I can decipher only the occasional word, so that most of my fan mail reads like this. Mr. Barry, cancel something. Subscription you something 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 idiot. Something humor. Something something dangerous. Something 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 8 year old. Something something your article. Something 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 swallowed an entire something 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 chemicals. Something 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 surgery. Something something artificial pelvis. Something something my lawyer. Something you. Because I can't understand my mail, I'm forced to respond in vague terms. Something you too. And all hope of real communication is lost. But the repercussions of the handwriting problem extend far beyond professional writers such as me and William Shakespeare. Have you ever asked yourself why the federal government, despite employing millions of bright people, displays the collective intelligence of a squeegee? The answer is that all of the important early documents that our government is based on, the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, the Magna Carta, and the Scarlet Letter, are written in totally illegible cursive handwriting. For over 200 years, the Supreme Court has been basically guessing what the Constitution says. It is only recently that historians using modern handwriting analysis equipment have been able to start deciphering the handwriting. So far, they discovered that the so-called Bill of Rights is actually a detailed order for party supplies. There's no mention of any Congress. The President is mentioned, but his only specified duty, which is not further explained, is to blow the horn of cheese. I could go on and on with historical examples of the handwriting problem. You'd be shocked if I were to tell you the original title of what is now referred to as the Old Testament. Suffice it to say that handwriting has been confusing humanity in general and the medical profession. For example, a recent study showed that in 1995, 78% of all unnecessary organ removals resulted from hospital personnel misinterpreting notes scribbled by doctors who were in most cases merely reminding themselves that it was time to purchase a new Lexus. As I said, handwriting has been confusing humanity for thousands of years. Things improved slightly in 1873, or whenever the hell the typewriter was invented, when the typewriter was invented. The big advantage of the typewriter was that it produced clear, legible words. The drawback was that the standard keyboard, which we still use today, was invented by dyslexics from Mars, so that the letters you need a lot, such as O, are hard to find and sometimes missing entirely, whereas totally unnecessary letters such as Q appear as many as four times apiece. To make matters worse, many people type in the four-finger lunge method, which means they make a lot of mistakes, which in turn means that they have to do a lot of crossing out, so that reading their documents is like listening to Porky Pig trying to complete a sentence. But everything is different and wonderful now, because now we have get ready for 72-point type in the Playbill font surrounded by a double-line 2.25-point box with shading. Word processing. Modern computerized word processing enables us, both as individuals and as a cohesive societal entity, to exponentially enhance and aggrandize the parameters, both qualitative and quantitative, not to mention paradigmatic, of our communicative conceptualizations. Because now we can spell great big words correctly without having a clue what they mean. This is made possible thanks to spell checking, which is when the computer goes through your writing, finds your mistakes, and shows you exactly how to fix them. For example, suppose you're trying to win the business of a major prospective client, and you write him the following letter. Dear, D-E-E-R, Mr. Stromple, it was a great, G-R-A-T-E, pleasure to meet, M-E-A-T, your, YOU'RE, staff, and the undersigned look forward to SEAU soon, INN, the near future. Clearly, you would not create a very good impression with a letter like this, but thanks to modern computerized word processing, you have nothing to worry about, because when you use your spell checker on this letter, not only does it inform you that there is no such word as strumple, but it also suggests the word that you probably meant to use. It can even make the substitution for you. The result is that your prospective client sees the following impressive document. Dear D-E-E-R, Mr. Strumpet, it was a great G-R-A-T-E pleasure to T-O-O meet M-E-A-T, your YOU'RE, staff, and the undersigned look forward to T-O-O-C-S-E-A-U soon, INN, the near future. But spell checking is just one of the advantages of modern computerized word processing. There is also an extremely helpful feature called grammar checking, which, when I apply it to the preceding sentence, informs me that it is preferable not to start sentences with but. It also informs me that the preceding sentence has a Fletch reading ease score of 44.0, a Fletch Kincaid grade level of 10.4, a Coleman Liao grade level of 15.9, and a Bournemouth grade level of 11.1. I have no idea what these numbers mean, but I assume you're supposed to use them to tailor your writing to your specific reader's mental capabilities, assuming you can find out what they are. Dear Mr. Strumpet, please inform the undersigned of your Coleman Liao grade level. Another truly wonderful thing you can do with modern computerized word processing is copy and paste. This makes it easy to copy something and repeat it as many times as you want without retyping it. This makes it easy to copy something and repeat it as many times as you want without retyping it. This makes it easy to copy something and repeat it as many times as you want without retyping it. This makes it easy to copy something and repeat it as many times as you want without retyping it. It's easy, thanks to copy and paste. You can actually use this capability to make any document much longer without having to personally think of anything to say. As you can imagine, this is a tremendous help to students who have been assigned to write research papers of a certain minimum length. This is now absurdly easy, especially if your computer has a CD-ROM drive, which enables you to copy huge gobs of information off CD-ROM disks and stick them anywhere you want. For example, I have a CD-ROM disk called the Microsoft Bookshelf, which includes, all on one disk, a dictionary, an abridged encyclopedia, a thesaurus, an almanac, a book of famous quotations, a chronology of historical events, a world atlas, and a zip code directory. Now, suppose I'm a high school student and it's 11 p.m. on a Sunday night, and I just remembered that 4 weeks ago I was assigned to write a 3,000-word report, which is due tomorrow morning, on photosynthesis, which I know absolutely nothing about because nobody ever mentions it on MTV. Now, in the old days, I would have been forced to spend hours copying information manually from the encyclopedia. But now, all I have to do is fire up my CD-ROM, and within a few minutes, I have cranked out the following scholarly document. Photosynthesis. Just about every word in the following report was stolen directly from various major publishers represented in the Microsoft Bookshelf, and if you try to use any of these words without their permission, or even read some of these words, packs of carnivorous lawyers will come around to your place of residence and explain the situation until your ears bleed. Photosynthesis. In any discussion of a topic such as photosynthesis, it is important, in the sense of crucial, critical, key, momentous, climactic, pivotal, and decisive, to ask the question, what is photosynthesis? The dictionary definition, of course, is photosynthesis, noun, the process in green plants and certain other organisms by which carbohydrates are synthesized from carbon dioxide and water using light as an energy source. Most forms of photosynthesis release oxygen as a byproduct.
We deduce from this definition that photosynthesis is basically a noun describing the process in green plants and certain other organisms by which carbohydrates are synthesized from carbon dioxide and water using light as an energy source. But this definition, in and of itself, is not enough for a truly scientific discussion of this topic at a depth of 3,000 words, 139 to this point. For when we use the word scientific, we are reminded of the famous quotation first emitted by Leo Tolstoy, 1828 to 1910, the famous Russian novelist and philosopher, who in chapter 10 of the book What is Art, 1898, reproduced in Tolstoy on Art, edited by Almer Maud, 1924, is quoted on the subject of science as follows. True science investigates and brings to human perception such truths and such knowledge as the people of a given time and society consider most important. Art transmits these truths from the region of perception to the region of emotion. What exactly did Tolstoy, the famous Russian novelist and philosopher, mean by this? Was he referring to photosynthesis? For that matter, had photosynthesis even been invented during the era 1828 to 1910, in which the famous Russian novelist and philosopher Leo Tolstoy lived? For this was, indeed, an era during which many things occurred. For example, the technical processes and managerial innovations of the English Industrial Revolution spread to Europe, especially Germany and the U.S., causing an explosion of industrial production, demand for raw materials, and competition for markets. Inventors, both trained and self-educated, provided the means for larger-scale production. Bessemer steel, 1856. Sewing machine, 1846. Many inventions were shown in the 1851 London Great Exhibition at the Crystal Palace, the theme of which was universal prosperity. But it is also important, as we reach the 372-word mark, not to forget that this was also an era of tragic events such as the American Civil War, 1861 to 65, a conflict between Northern states, Union, and Southern seceded states, Confederacy. It is known in the South as the War Between the States, and by the official Union designation of War of the Rebellion. Many causes, over a number of years, contributed to what William H. Seward called the irrepressible conflict, sectional rivalry, moral indignation aroused by the abolitionists, the question of the extension of slavery into new territories, and a fundamental disagreement about the relative supremacy of federal control and states' rights. Yet, by the same token, the Civil War also produced Abraham Lincoln, who, although he did not specifically mention photosynthesis in his famous Gettysburg Address, copyright 1992, Michael Jackson, which was coincidentally delivered in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, zip codes 17325 and 17326, he did say, quote, 47 years ago, our fathers brought forth upon this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that, dot, dot, dot. And so on, great gobs of information gushing out easy as pie thanks to CD-ROM and copy and paste. With word processing, there is no end to the amount of words you can crank out without having to become personally involved with what they say. Of course, this is also the basic principle of the computerized form letter, which has become the standard medium of communication sent to humans by organizations, businesses, and government agencies. Most of the letters we receive are generated by computers, using information supplied by other computers, which in turn have gathered it from other computers. The result, as I noted in the introduction to this book, is that much of the time the people who send out these letters have no idea what the letters say or to whom they're being sent. City of Milwaukee, Department of Codes, Bureau of Rules, Office of Enforcement, Cubicle of No Return. Dear Mr. Dahmer, It has come to the attention of this department's computer that, while residing in the city of Milwaukee at 924 North 25th Street, Apartment 213, you killed people and ate their body parts. Please be advised that this may be in violation of Section 2938.6 of the City of Milwaukee Housing, Zoning, and Dining Code, and that you may therefore be subject to certain fines, penalties, and lectures. Please contact this department immediately by calling the hotline number listed below and listening to a recorded voice until your brain turns into guacamole. If you fail to comply, our department's computer will have no choice but to turn your name over to the Motor Vehicle Department's computer, which is so inhuman that it makes our computer look like Andy Griffith. Sincerely, L. Fenster LaPlume, Acting Superintendent, died in 1987, but still receiving a generous pension. I should not reveal this, but we in the newspaper medium now produce almost all of our stories via automated word processing. We have found that there is no need to waste time and money having human reporters write entire stories from scratch, when all we really need to do is insert a few current facts into previously written articles. Washington, President, name of President, charged today that the name of Congressional Committee was engaging in a witch hunt and using McCarthy-style tactics in its investigation of the burgeoning name of some insanely complicated, terminally bore-ass scandal affair. In response, Committee Chairman, name of Chairman, accused the administration of stonewalling and pledged to hold hearings until everybody involved in this matter is dead. The name of scandal affair concerns allegations that, insert standard boilerplate summary of scandal, or insert today's horoscope. It makes no difference, since nobody will ever read this far anyway. New York. The name of some organization that sounds authoritative, even though nobody ever heard of it, like Institute of Dietary Fiber, announced today that a new authoritative study shows that name of something that a lot of people consume, such as coffee, Chinese food, celery, or water, which only last week had been found by another authoritative study to be, choose one, good for you, or very likely to cause cancer, is in fact, choose one, very likely to cause cancer, or good for you. Some foreign city with a name like Zogblech that you could not in a million years locate on a map. Fighting resumed today in this war-torn capital following the breakdown of yesterday's ceasefire between names of two ethnic groups that have been killing each other nonstop for 6,000 years. Deeming the resolution of this conflict critical to United States interests in whatever region this particular conflict is located in, President, name of President, immediately dispatched U.S. Secretary of State, name of Secretary of State, to the scene with a suitcase containing five new ceasefire agreements, which at the current breakage rate of one every 1.7 days, should enable this troubled region to set a new world ceasefire breaking record by next week. Los Angeles, name of famous male show business personality, and name of famous female show business personality, have announced through a spokesperson that they are splitting up, but plan to continue having illegitimate children. See how easy it is. Don't tell anybody, but you can even use automated word processing to write newspaper humor columns. If you aren't alarmed, then no offense, but you have the intelligence of choose one, a peat bog, used chewing gum, gravel, an O.J. Simpson juror. Because according to an article from the name of newspaper, sent in by alert reader, name of reader, pick one, cow, frog, rutabaga, tax accountant. Recently, pick one, exploded, fell from the sky, was found in a taco, was found in a toilet, married Donald Trump. I'm not making this up. Ha ha ha. Booger. So, to summarize, with word processing, you can produce enormous quantities of correctly spelled words without the time-consuming labor of personally figuring out what they say. This means that you can save a lot of time, which is good, because you can use that extra time for a really productive activity, namely, messing around with fonts. Yes. Once you get into word processing, you'll find that for every minute you spend producing words, you'll spend at least 10 minutes deciding what font to put them in. There are hundreds and hundreds of fonts available, and once you start trying out different ones, you'll discover it's really, really, really hard to stop. Well, this is good, because by creatively using fonts, you can give any document greater impact. Let's take a look at an actual example. Suppose you're a corporate executive writing an important letter to a group of your employees. You don't want to be sending them a document written in some ho-hum typeface like... Imagine a basic-looking, boring font that says, "Dear valued employee, as you know, this has been a difficult year for all of us, what with the economic recession, combined with the increased foreign competition, combined with..." And so on. What a visual snore of a document. Your employees are going to take one look and think, don't these people have any fonts other than plain old 12-point Courier New? Now, let's look at how this same letter can be transformed into a high-impact, must-read document, thanks to the creative use of fonts. In the following script, imagine a hodgepodge of words highlighted in Helvetica to bold to Times Roman numeral to avant-garde. "Dear valued employee, as you know, this has been a difficult year for all of us, what with the economic recession, combined with the increased foreign competition, combined with the unfortunate fatal, explosion at the Humberville plant, combined with the fact that our CEO needs a jet with a bigger hot tub. As a result, we have no choice but to let you go effective Christmas Eve. But you may rest assured that should our future needs ever call for employees, we will definitely think about getting in touch with you. Warmest human seasonal regards, Bob Bunderheimer, Human Resources." See what a difference a little creativity makes. It makes you wonder what our ancestors could have done if only they had been able to use modern fonts to add zing to their writing. "The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want." But that is, frankly, our ancestors' problem. We are extremely fortunate to live in an age of word processing because, as I noted earlier, you can produce enormous quantities of correctly spelled words without the time-consuming labor of personally figuring out what they say. You can produce enormous quantities of correctly spelled words without the time-consuming labor of personally figuring out what they have to say. You can produce enormous quantities of correctly spelled words without the time-consuming labor of personally figuring out what they have to say. You can produce enormous quantities of correctly spelled words without the time-consuming labor of personally figuring out what they have to say. You can produce enormous quantities of correctly spelled words without the time-consuming labor of personally figuring out what they have to say. You can produce enormous quantities of correctly spelled words without the time-consuming labor of personally figuring out what they have to say. I think this chapter is plenty long enough now.
Welcome.
Chapter 9, The Internet, Transforming Society and Shaping the Future Through Chat. Or, "Watch What You Write, Mr. Chuckle Trousers." Or, "Why Suck Is Okay, Blow Is Not." Plus, Danger, Sushi Tapeworms. The Internet is the most important single development in the history of human communication since the invention of call waiting, A bold statement? Well, indeed it is, but consider how the Internet can simplify and enhance our lives. Imagine that you need to do the following chores. 1. Make an airline reservation. 2. Buy some tickets to a concert. 3. Research a question on your income tax. And 4. Help your child gather information for a school report. To accomplish all this 15 years ago, you could easily have spent an entire day talking on the phone and driving to the library, IRS office, and so on. Whereas today, you simply turn on your computer, dial up your local internet access number, and in less than an instant, thanks to the internet's global reach and astounding versatility, you're listening to a busy signal. Yes, it can be difficult to get through to the internet because it's so popular. These days, it seems as though everybody has one of those cryptic little internet addresses. Hunchback@NotreDame.com, jhoffa@landfill.r.i.p, millionsofbacteria@yourarmpit.p-u. Why is the internet so popular? For one thing, it enables you to communicate quickly and easily with people all over the world, even people you don't want to communicate with. I know this for a fact, because one time several years ago when I was new to the Internet, I attempted to send an electronic message to a writer I know in England named Michael Bywater, whom I had met when I was on a book tour in London. Michael and I had really hit it off, in part because we share a common philosophical outlook on important economic, social, and political issues, and in part because we consumed an enormous quantity of beer. So when I got back to the United States, I wrote Michael this chatty little message, which was basically an inside joke that would make sense only to him. It addressed Michael as Mr. Chuckle Trousers, a name I'd seen in a London newspaper headline, and it contained various sophisticated and extremely subtle humor elements that could look to the uninformed observer like bad words. The problem was that because of my limited grasp of how the internet works, instead of sending this message just to Michael, I somehow managed to send, or in cyberlingo, post it to the whole entire internet. It immediately became semi-famous. People called it the Chuckle Trousers Post, and it spread like wildfire around the internet as people made copies and sent them to their friends who made copies for their friends. As far as I can tell, thousands, perhaps millions of people ended up seeing it. To this day, I am regularly approached by total strangers who say, "Hi, Mr. Chuckle Trousers," and walk off snickering. If there are, in fact, intelligent beings elsewhere in the universe, I'm pretty sure that the first communication they will receive from our planet will be the Chuckle Trousers Post. If it is the first communication they receive, they will immediately vaporize Earth, and they will be right. The irony is, about a week after the original post, Michael Bywater, remember him? Posted a message on the internet saying that he'd heard there was some message going around with his name on it, but he hadn't seen it, and could somebody please send it to him? In other words, I had managed to send this hideously embarrassing message to everybody in the world except the person who was supposed to read it. Yes, thanks to the awesome communications capabilities of the internet, I was able to make an intergalactic fool of myself, and there's no reason why you can't do the same. So get with it. Join the internet. At first, you may be a little confused by some of the jargon, but trust me, after you've spent just a few hours cruising in cyberspace, you'll be totally lost. To speed this process along, I've prepared the following helpful list of common questions and answers about the Internet. Question: what exactly is the Internet? Answer: the Internet is a worldwide network of university, government, business, and private computer systems. Question: who runs it? Answer: a 13-year-old named Jason. Question: how can I get on the Internet? Answer: the easiest way is to sign up with one of the popular commercial online services, such as Prodigy, CompuServe, or America Online, which will give you their program disks for free. I have received Prodigy discs with airline peanuts. Really, they weren't bad, although they could have used a little salt. Or if you just leave your house unlocked, they'll sneak in at night and install their programs on your computer when you're sleeping. They really want your business. Question: what are the benefits of these services? Answer: the major benefit is that they all have simple, user-friendly interfaces that enable you, even if you have no previous computer experience, to provide the online services with the information they need to automatically put monthly charges on your credit card bill forever. Question: what if I die? Answer: they don't care. Question: can I cancel my account? Answer: of course, you can cancel your account at any time. Question: how? Answer: nobody has ever been able to find out. Some of us have been trying for years to cancel our online service accounts, but no matter what we do, the charges keep appearing on our bills. We're thinking of entering the Federal Witness Protection Program. Question: what if I have children? Answer: you'll want an anesthetic because it really hurts. Question: no, I mean, what if my children also use my internet account? Answer: you should just sign your house and major internal organs.